From Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. To wrap up season one of Migratory Patterns, we end where we began, by welcoming my amazing wife and partner, Alisa Margaret Rutherford Fortunati, onto the show. A lot has changed since we recorded what was supposed to be a test interview in early April. Now, one move across town, a master's degree, and 19 episodes later, we sit down to, well, I don't know really. Alisa surprised me with the topic, which was supposed to be a rap session about which of our memories anchor us to our individual identities, and what sensory experiences go along with them. As we quickly discovered, my brain doesn't hang on to experiences the same way that hers does, and the resulting conversation that we have about this clash causes us to reflect on what makes us feel safe and, quote, at home, and how we're able to blend our lives together while each processing the migration experience in our own way. I'm very excited that Alisa agreed to come on the show again, as it bookends my own journey of discovery that began with the show's launch back in the summer. I've learned a lot, and have been incredibly surprised at just how diverse people's definition of home is, and by just how similar our experiences have all been. If season one was an experiment, I absolutely consider my thesis to have been validated. This show will take a break for about 6 weeks and will return just after Spring Festival in China on Monday, February 11. I've got a great guest of list lined up, as well as some special surprises in store. And one last thing. I want to say thank you to all of you who've been listening, whether you began with the first clunky episode or if this is your first time tuning in. It's been incredibly rewarding to see the audience steadily grow with each passing week. I hope that the conversations that you've heard have provided you with answers, affirmation, and most importantly, something to think about. Whether you're an international migrant or are happily living in your passport country, the challenges that human migration presents affect us all. I hope you'll keep listening, raising the topics that we discuss with your friends and family, and that you'll continue to reach out to me with your own thoughts on where we should take the conversation next season. As always, you can reach me on Twitter at ZAX2000. You can also reach out by email. It's at migratorypatterns@migrationmedia.net. That's it for this week and this season. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation, another conversation, with Alisa Rutherford Fortunati. Alisa Rutherford Fortunati, welcome back to Migratory Patterns.
You forgot my middle name.
I didn't forget it. It's just you have so many syllables already. I didn't want to add more.
I feel like if you're going for the full hyphenated last name, you should put my middle name in there too.
Well, if
you're disrespecting my great grandmother.
Well, you know, I don't actually even know what we're doing here. You just told me to put on the microphone on. So what's happening?
Just for anyone who's wondering, my middle name is Margaret, which was my great-grandmother's name. So I got the idea for this particular iteration of the podcast a few weeks ago when you were interviewing Tanya.
Tanya Crossman, right.
Tanya Crossman. So while I was hiding away in our room, wherever you were doing the podcast, I was listening to a bit of what she was talking about, the concept of being a third culture kid or having basically a complex cultural identity. And I was thinking about some of my friends who have lived in other cultures and might identify themselves as third culture kids or army brats or whatever term they choose to use to identify the fact that they live outside of their where they hold a passport for, and that they have a complex set.
Yeah, what Tanya taught me is they just say passport country, and that just means place where you can be a legal resident or something. It's even starting to try to pin down, because some people have multiple passports, it gets complicated.
Exactly. And sometimes the place where they're born, their passport identity, holds nothing for them at all. Even. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about one of my friends in particular. I won't call her out by name, but she's from Australia by passport, and I believe she has a German passport as well, but she grew up in Spain, and she has a very complex cultural identity because she can't fully own a Spanish identity, even though that's where she spent the most time and that's the greatest affinity that she has. So while I was kind of eavesdropping on your interview with Tanya and I was thinking about my friends, the concept of what can we own from where we've been? And I guess it's not so much about owning, but what can we claim as even just a favorite or a thing that makes us feel at home? It doesn't have to be from a culture that we feel we have the right to identify with or that we feel we have full ownership over. But what are the things that give us that sense of home in our own bodies, even that give us that sense of comfort? You know, we have this thing in the United States, I'm sure they have the terms in other cultures and countries as well, of comfort food. And usually in the United States, they're very heavy things.
Meatloaf and mashed potatoes.
Yeah, that really like really, not my comfort food. but they're the things that make you feel a connection to your past and things that have made you who you are. And they might not be places that you are anymore. They might be from people that are no longer in your life. Like my great-grandmother, I have strong memories of her and the love she gave me, and she was a part of my home, but she's no longer here. I was teasing you at the beginning of the podcast, but it kind of, now in reflection, I'm so incredibly proud to have her name because she was such an important part of my life, even though she passed away when I was quite young. I have extremely strong memories of visiting her in Montana. I was born in Montana, but I can't say I'm from Montana really because I grew up somewhere else. So there's pieces of Montana I hold with me, but I'm not going to claim it as a larger part of my identity. I'm not going to say I'm from Montana. Say I was born there and I grew up in Seattle. So along with all of this, thinking about the concepts of what can we say is a part of us without cultural appropriation, without identifying with a culture that maybe we can't fully claim, I thought about our senses and I thought about what makes me think of where I grew up, what makes me think of my life and who I am and who I've become and all the things that I consider home and traditions that I've held. And I started thinking about smells and sounds and sights and feelings. And so that, surprise, is what this podcast is about.
Oh.
The sights, the sounds, the smells, the feelings, the tastes that you identify with who you are and a part of who you are. Mm. They can be favorite things. They can be things that remind you of home. But the things that for you are your comforts and your connections to the past and who you've become.
Okay.
So I'll start.
Okay.
And while I start, because I have mine all written down.
Yeah, you've been planning this.
While I start, it's okay for you not to practice active listening and to be thinking of your own thoughts about what you might say. And then you can listen back and practice active listening when.
Okay. Well, I will say one of the things about doing a podcast is there's a lot of active listening.
Yes.
Even if you miss something in the conversation,
yeah,
you get it when you listen to it three times over.
Well, it's okay for you to be reflecting on your own sense experiences. Mm. So for me, some of the ones that came to mind, I kind of thought of like 1 to 3. And if you're listening to this podcast, I highly recommend that you kind of play this game or do this reflective act along with us, because you might be surprised what things come up for you as points of remembrance and things that really you feel connect you to your life, to your past, and who you've become. For me, for smells, one of the it definitely is the first thing that I think of is the smell of rain in Seattle. It has this earthy but kind of acidic character to it that I love. I remember being a little kid and sitting on our porch in Ballard, Washington, in, you know, the heart of what I consider my Seattle, and having a blanket wrapped around me while it was raining on me, and how just incredibly comforting and wonderful that smell was of the rain. And I noticed when I moved to other places that it didn't smell the same. It was still nice. I think the smell of rain is nice, but the smell of rain in Seattle to me is just such, it's part of who I am. Another thing that really reminds me of where I came from and who I am is the smell of sawdust. My father was a woodworker, a carpenter, a jack of all trades. He always said, if you grow up in a small town, you have to be able to do everything. And if you live in a city, you have to specialize. And he had both aspects of that, but he always had his own shop. And on the weekends, often when we were together, we would go to his shop, and there was just so much sawdust in the air. And it's just such a warm, naturally woody scent that connects me to the sense of where I grew up in his shop. And the last one would be cinnamon rolls. Although I don't really celebrate many holidays now, my mother, almost every Christmas, would bake cinnamon rolls. And not from scratch cinnamon rolls, like Pillsbury Dough House, crack the can on the counter, pop them in the oven kind of cinnamon rolls. And that smell to me has a very strong sense of tradition. It wasn't so much that it was Christmas. It wasn't so much that it was anything other than something that we did every year that was like, you could just count on that experience that you were going to have cinnamon rolls. And this year, I am bound and determined to make some vegan, gluten-free cinnamon rolls that are awesome, which I've done before. And it's quite the to-do because Pillsbury Dough House, you need to get your ball in the game. But they don't have it.
I feel like you even made these once.
I did.
Yeah, I feel like I had these once.
And it was so good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do it again this year. Yeah. We're celebrating with our nieces and some of them. And I'll definitely bring that tradition forward for them. So for you, what smells do you think connect you to who you've become?
Okay, this is where we're going to diverge a little bit off of your script, because two things. Number one, I noticed that you're associating home with your childhood.
Part of it, but it's not just that, but yeah.
So that is interesting to me because
for other people, it wouldn't be that. You know, it might be during their formative college years, the smell of pine trees or something,
I'm just observing what's happening with you. I mean,
yeah.
That to me is really interesting. I will say, I don't think this really works for me. I don't have any,
what about like urine at Fenway Stadium?
Fenway Park, baby.
I'm sorry.
Fenway Park.
Ooh, fail.
yeah, I just lost some Boston cred there.
Sorry.
Okay. So I don't have any smells that I think. I can remember some.
But, okay.
I have things that I know were formative
yeah.
that I made a point to make a note of. Like,
let me stop you for a second.
Okay.
And let's expand this idea.
All right.
Because for me, a lot of my things are, you'll see when we get to other senses that a lot of my things are from other places that I've been to. But if you say in our discussions that when you came to China, it was kind of like a rebirth. It, you know, you were who you were in Boston, and Boston is an incredible.
I think of it like waking up, but yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Less woo-woo, but.
Well. It's kind of the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
I'm just teasing you. But what about coming here? Like, I can think of some smells that I bet you would recognize as important things to you. Or things that are like, oh my gosh, when I smell that smell, I think of something that was important to me.
Oh, well, sure. Everyone has that. But I just think it's... I'm really interested in how you Okay, so normally the way this would work for me, or the way I've seen it portrayed on film or whatever, is mm-hmm. you smell something and it triggers.
Yeah.
You're doing it the other way.
Mm-hmm.
You've noted these smells, or you have these powerful memories, and you don't need the smell to trigger the memory. You actually can remember the smell as part of the memory.
It's more so like the things that are, they are cultural capital markers for important events, which is a complicated way of saying.
Is that something you got out of one of your fancy textbooks when you're in your master's course? Because that's what it sounds like you just did just there.
Cultural capital, perhaps. But that's actually one of the challenges that a lot of TCKs have, is maybe mm-hmm. they hold a passport to the United States, but they don't have the cultural capital that the people that grew up in the United States
had.
I see. Like when a song goes off and it's Cookie Monster's song, you know, she is her cookie.
Yeah, and they might not know the
song. They might not know the song, and everybody else in the room does. And that might not seem significant unless you don't have that cultural capital.
Right.
And it's not that they have any less value in that room of people, or that they have any fewer funds of knowledge. They have huge amount of knowledge and background and cultural capital, but it's mixed from different cultures.
Right.
So that's why I think recognizing the things that are important to us in smells and sounds and sights and tastes is a way... perhaps a small way to say, this is all part of me, even though you maybe can't say you're Spanish, or maybe you can't say you're German, or maybe you can't feel like you can't say you're American, or maybe you feel like you can't say you're Australian, or whatever it is for that individual, you can say, this food is important to me.
You know,
this smell is important to me. This sight, this taste is important to me.
So this is, I think you're talking about something that Tanya and I touched on in our conversation, and I think you're doing it just from a different direction, which is really interesting, because she talked about how TCKs will have more in common with other kids, other TCKs, even if those TCKs have grown up in different countries or have bounced around, but even if they don't share any common experiences, they will actually have more culturally in common with them than they will with kids from their quote home culture, their passport culture, or even their parents, who, you know, and it's because it's a type of experience. So that cultural capital that you're talking about wouldn't necessarily be a specific memory or a specific thing. Like you and I, for instance, when we go, you know, when we're back in America and we're talking with people, I've thought about this what is it like when I talk to my friends? And there is just a certain thing that they're not going to get when I talk about my experiences, because they won't have gone through them, you know? But you will, right? You'll get it because we have a shorthand. Even if I'm talking about something that you weren't there for, you will still understand the context.
It's like an inside joke.
Yeah.
Every culture has these insider knowledge that people are expected to know to some degree. And that changes with communities, that changes with families, that changes with parts of the country. There are these things that you're expected to know. It's the, I'm losing the term, but we talk about it in education as well. The hidden expectations, the untaught curriculum, the things that you expect your students to know without ever teaching them.
Oh, what's the ephemeral knowledge? Or I might be misremembering that, but it's kind of the thing that everyone is supposed to know. George Washington was the first president. Maybe you learned that in school, but everyone just knows it.
Yeah.
In the culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where this idea came about, is that we don't all have the same shared experiences, but there are some things we share that are important. And being able to say, this is my important thing. It may not be from the cultures that you claim, but you can say, this is my important thing, and recognize that there are things that you hold. There are funds of knowledge. There is cultural capital. There are experiences that you hold within you that are of value to you, and they may be to other people as well. It's a way to, I guess, recognize those aspects of yourself. And it might sound silly to do it through your senses, but senses are incredibly powerful things.
It doesn't sound silly at all, because everyone has senses. Everyone has these things that... Even if they're different experiences, the fact that you can say, when I smell this, I think of X.
Right.
Everyone has something like that. So it is a way, through an experience that isn't the same, to still have a common experience.
Exactly. Yeah. And you think of, like, in the example of TCKs, third culture kids, that let's say a kid who has a British passport and they grew up in Morocco. They can't necessarily claim that they're Moroccan, but they could, with somebody else who grew up there and is Moroccan, say, oh, the sunsets. That's for me. That's the sight that gives me comfort. The sunsets in Morocco. I don't know. I haven't been to Morocco, so I can't say specifically.
The sunsets could legitimately suck. We don't know.
I highly doubt it for some reason, but you know, that's, or like the food, like the tangine or something like that, that would be something that you would hold dear, and you couldn't say I am Moroccan, but you could say this food is really important to me. It's something that I hold dear. And so it's a way of kind of, again, not appropriating something, because that is something to be mindful of, but also recognizing that things from different places can be important to you, and that that's okay.
So what's important to you from this place?
Oh, gosh, China, so many things. All of my notes are from things all over the place lived.
Exactly. I had a feeling. So as soon as you started in with this, and your first list of things was all from your childhood, I knew that you wouldn't have stuff from China in there, because you're looking back. What about the present? What's the experience? What are the experiences, or what's one or two experiences that you've had in China that have made you feel at home?
Oh, wow, that's a complicated one. There's a lot of things that I think it's, I think it will be easier to talk about what's been important to me in China once I leave. One of the things you said is, you know, you're looking back, and I think that's because it's easier. In the present, there's a lot of things that are important to me here, a lot of significant things, and you know, if I think about smells and things like that, like chong tofu, like, I'm not sure if I'm saying that completely correctly, kind of, but like smelly tofu.
Stinky tofu.
Stinky tofu is something that, like, if I ever smell that, I will think of China, you know? There's so many other smells that are much more pleasant than that, but I think it's easier once you've left a place to recognize what you're going to carry for a long time, because there's lots of things in the sights, the smells, the sounds, the tastes. Oh, the food here is so incredible. That the feelings that will be significant for me in the future as well, but some of them will fall away, and only time will tell what I'm going to hold with me in the long run. You know, living here and being a teacher, one of the things that's the most significant is just watching a kid get it, you know, where they've been struggling with something, and then they're just like, oh! And they not only get it, but they own that they got it. You know, it's not that you taught it to them. They understood it. And it's really hard to tell, like, from the sights, the sounds, the smells, which things I'll carry for years to come. I think that's why most of my things are from at least 4 years plus. Because
since it's when you've been here.
Yeah, because I'm not ready to say these are the things I'm going to carry with me. I mean, you and I got married here. We officially became a couple here. I got my master's degree and launched into my international teaching career here. I mean, there's so many significant events and the sense experiences that go along with those. I can't say which I'm going to carry forward with me.
So I want to stop you here for a second because I'm also fascinated by what you've done. My question was, and I don't mean to say what you've done. I guess what I should say is how you've kind of interpolated the question, right? How mm-hmm. you internalized it. Mm. When I asked was, what are some of the things that have made you feel at home here? And you associate that with, what am I going to take with me?
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to me.
Well, if you go back to the first podcast in the Migratory Patterns podcast lineup, which is me and Mike speaking, I highly recommend it. if you go back to that and you look at my definition of home, it's transitory.
Yeah.
It changes with me. So that's in line with that. I am at home in my own skin. It's a long process. It's an ongoing process. It's a complicated process. But home changes. People change. Experiences change. And you change along with them. So for me, I can't say yet those things that made me feel at home because home is a very complex
You don't know what thing. Home is till you've left it, maybe.
Yeah. No, I think that this is something you've talked about as well, that in moving overseas, you felt more American, and I would agree with that. Again,
we're going to feel more Chinese after we leave China.
No, but China will be even more part of us, maybe.
Right. That's fair.
You know, and our experiences here will be even more a part of us, and I think it's hard to reflect now because I'm in the present of this experience as well. And I don't really want to think about the things that I'll miss yet because I don't have to miss them yet. So that's why my experiences are from living in my childhood and living in other countries because those things I've left behind, and they were important to me, and they're part of who I am. So who I am now and who I'm becoming now, I'll know that later on.
You know, we're kind of looking down the barrel of possibly leaving in probably seven months.
Mm-hmm.
And if it-
That's why I don't want to think about it.
If it goes that way. I mean, we still don't know, but
yeah.
I just realized something as you were talking about that. This will be the first time you move somewhere where you take something with you.
You?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. I would like to correct you.
Okay.
This is a footnote to...
Well, the penguin came later.
Yeah. No. The penguin came before you. I have a stuffed penguin. I will fully admit, as an adult, it is huge. It's about 2 feet tall.
2 feet tall.
Two feet tall. I believe it's stuffed with recycled material from Sri Lanka.
He likes to sit on my side of the bed.
Yeah, he takes over my side of the bed.
He's very possessive.
He's my buddy, and his name is Professor... Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Step back. His Royal Highness, Professor Wimbley McWaterbottoms. And I've had him since the end of my senior year of college. And my mother taught me that stuffed animals are not just for children. They don't need to take over your lives, but that they can be really comforting and often and awesome. They can be very comforting and awesome when you're transitioning in different parts of your life. At that point, I had just broken up with my first love. and my best friend, who I've known since I was 5 years old, maybe 6 years old, she and I went and bought them together. And Wimbley has been with me since, and he has been to every country except for New Zealand that I have been in.
You didn't go to New Zealand?
No, it was too complicated. He's big. He's big, so taking him in my luggage was complicated. Yeah.
Actually, you couldn't even bring him over the first time you came here. Yeah. You actually had to wait till one of your trips back.
Yeah. So, TMI, too much information, but Wimbley has come with me everywhere.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll be the second thing that you've brought
with you. Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's important for you to remember that you are second to a stuffed animal. So there's that. can we go back to
You want to go back? Well, okay. So I haven't participated.
That's yet. What I'm saying.
Well, the reason I want to say this is because I'm learning something here. I'm learning about how you, I'm going to say, imprint. Or how your experiences imprint on you and how you think about, well, let me put it this way. In the moment, I will often say, I want to remember this. This mm-hmm. is, I understand this is formative, not because I have some kind of insight, but like, mm-hmm. I know growing up and in the years before I moved to China, I can remember very specific moments, lots of them, where I would just say to myself, this is what it's all about. I got to remember this. I'm mm-hmm. going to drink this in. I'm going to remember this. And those are the things. So the things mm-hmm. that you're describing through your smells,
it's such a weird phrase.
I know. The things you're describing through your smells.
Yeah. Your sense of smell, your sense memories.
Your sense memories. And how you talked about, you can't really think about the things that made you feel at home in the moment. You have to kind of wait until you leave. I understand and identify with that because it makes sense. I think for me, I have a good idea. I guess I have a finalist list of things like that I know are going to be the things I think about when I think about China. Mm-hmm. Or when I think about how awesome it was here, how, God, I'm talking in the past tense, we're still here. We mm-hmm. might not be gone for a while, but mm-hmm. I already have this. I've also been here a little bit longer. I mean, 10 years, but I can remember.
You're so old.
I can remember a whole bunch of crazy stuff. I can remember meeting with the governor of, you know, Qinghai province. I can remember the first night out, I met one of my really good friends and her roommate. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of my first nights out here, I can remember some amazing parties, not for the party and the drinking, but just for the stuff that was happening. And I recognized, mm-hmm. this is very formative. Mm-hmm. And I could go back further. I can remember, working at Fenway. You know, you mentioned Fenway Park and smelling the urine. I remember peeing in the troughs at Fenway before they renovated. But what I do remember...
Did that re-earn me the credit that I lost by calling it a stadium and not a park?
Yeah.
I hope so.
But I do, like, I remember making a point, walking up the ramp behind home plate before the gates open when I worked there almost every game and just taking a good 15 to 30 seconds just to drink it all in. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I wouldn't be there forever. And I didn't know how long I would not be there. I still have cousins who work there, 20 years later. But I knew that that was important to me and that I wanted to remember it. So I have an impression from my time in China of what the formative things are. And I think you're right that when we leave eventually, when it happens, as I get some distance, those things, the best ones will stand out. And I probably can't tell what those are until we're gone.
Well, this is what I'll say. I think it's good to go with the flow of the podcast and the discussion. And so if you want to see the things that I connect to as part of my sense memories and sense experiences from different places that I've lived, there's plenty of them, but I've written a number down and you can go to
migratorypatterns.podbean.com and there's actually, well, it'll be in the show notes.
This will be in the show notes. There'll be a little in the show notes That's really all you need to go and look and see, and it'll have mine. And I hope you take the time to think of yours, what they are, because it's amazing the things that have stayed with you. Just to give another piece of what's written in the show notes is, for me, one of my important sound memories is the sound of rain on my grandfather's tin roof in Montana. So again, that's one of those places I was born, but I didn't grow up, but we went every summer to go to family reunions and to visit family. And that sound of the rain on the tin roof is just one of my favorite sounds in the entire world.
Yes, I can attest to this day. You love it when it rains.
I do. It's so comforting to me. Some people find it depressing when it rains. When it rains, to me, I just feel so relaxed and calm and happy.
Now, are these impressions, these sense memories that you, or these memories that you associate with senses, are these things that make you feel at home?
Well, to take a step back, the reason that I mentioned that is that this is an important memory to me, but again, I wouldn't say I'm from Montana. And that's kind of bringing it back to the reason for kind of ending this season's podcast in this way. And I'm not so worried about the concept of home in it. I'd say they give me comfort. And for some people, home is a comforting place. For some people, home is a very complicated place. But I know that those things, when I think of them, they give me comfort and they remind me of a sense of feeling happy and safe and peaceful. And although home is a complicated thing and it's complicated for people, I hope that everyone can find even small moments through their lives where they have felt safe and comforted and like they belonged. And I think that's what part of what home I hopefully can be for people. It's not always, but I hope that that's something that it can be, is a safe place.
You're making me think of our future together and how it's going to be different from my past. And I don't just mean because we're together. When I moved out of my mom's place, I lived out on my own for 10 years. Then I moved to China, and I lived in China for 10 years. I don't know if we're going to end up living in another place for more than a handful of years.
It's hard to say.
I mean, we can't say.
I think it's whatever we're both meant to do. You know, I'm an educator. You're a bridge builder. You're a connector. And I think we'll see how that all comes to be. I mean, I know I'm going to teach for quite a while, and you're launching into this new phase in your life. And I think we both enjoy the concept of a safe landing pad. And like, we're getting ready to go visit my mom and my stepdad, and my nieces are going to be there. And I'm already thinking of like, okay, how can I make it a safe space for them and a safe space for me? And I was thinking about blanket fort with, I'm going to go to the library with my nieces, and we're going to get stacks of books, graphic novels for Vi and for Violet. And then whatever Zoe, the kind of books that she would like. And then like maybe mystery, sci-fi, fantasy for me, and we're going to make a blanket fort where no technology is allowed, and we're going to bring really comfy pillows in there. And so, you know, like, we're already creating our own experiences and our own memories and our own traditions and finding our touchstones.
Yeah, we haven't even had a chance really to make our own traditions yet.
Well, we have one. Every year we go and we take a picture. That's probably going to be one of my sights from China.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, is every year the first night.
We recreate the first night, the picture from the first night when we're here.
Yeah. And it's in Sanlitun, in the village. There's this picture. And every year we get the angle slightly wrong because we cannot figure out exact angle from the first night we were there. But we have pictures from every year.
In the same spot.
So I think that having traditions that a larger group of people are celebrating is a powerful thing. But if you choose not to participate in those, or if you choose to participate in your own way, make your own traditions. You know, make the things that make you feel like, yeah, I know that's coming up. I'm excited for that. I'm excited to mark the changing of time with this and to, you know, it's just fun.
You know, at kind of the undercurrent, at least for me, the undercurrent of this whole discussion, this whole hangout rap session has been, for me, it's about we're on the precipice of transitioning to a new phase of life for us, whether it's a new place or it's going to be, at the very least, it'll be a new job for you, mm-hmm. even if it's in Beijing, if mm-hmm. it'll be a new job for you. Mm-hmm. I'm on this venture with Migration Media. We're, you know, looking to supercharge things in the new year. So this is, we're both kind of in this transition space or the space right before a transition, and we're doing mm-hmm. it together. And to be fair, neither of us has really done a huge transition together yet. I mean, you, mm-hmm. you transitioned here and that was together, but it was you doing it on mm-hmm. your own. Mm-hmm. And this will be the first time we do a big life transition, each of us doing a transition in our own lives, but we're doing it together. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that that's a lot of what this is really all about, the subtext. And what we're going to have to do is, by the time season two ends, it should be, we'll know by the time season two is ending, we'll know what your job situation is, and we'll have a really good idea of how Migration Media is doing by then. Mm-hmm. And we'll have to sit down and have another one of this, another rap session like this. And
or I'll just have to take over the podcast again and completely surprise you.
Yes, you'll sit down with some new concept that I won't get, that doesn't that I don't, that makes total sense to you, and I'm just like, okay.
you're like that's okay. It's yep. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get it. I can intellectualize it, and I love you for it. But it just isn't me, and it's so great that we could sit
Mike down. Mike and Elisa, yeah. Elisa talking about ethereal, poetic things, and Mike going, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
That's great. I'm glad we're married.
I love you. Oh my gosh. So anyway. Mushy mushy.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to wrap this up now. Elisa, we are done for
Elisa season. Elisa Margaret Rutherford Fortunati.
Thank you.
Your loving wife.
My loving partner. Thank you for coming on, and thank you for being very supportive during this first season as I've been trying to get this thing going. I really appreciate it.
You are most welcome, my dear.
Well, that's a wrap on this episode and on season one. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. Please stay subscribed. As I said, we'll be back on Monday, February 11th with Season 2. As always, reach out to me on Twitter with your comments and suggestions. We're at ZAX2000, or reach out by email. We're at migratorypatterns@migrationmedia.net. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in a couple months.